12 traditions. This... Okay. Welcome, everyone. A guide to the 12 traditions. Today we're at tradition 11. Our public relations policy, is based on attraction rather than promotion. We maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, films, and other public media. If you are joining us as an attendee, we do ask you to mute. Welcome, fellow travelers. Thank you for joining us today for our workshop on Tradition 11, a Guide to the 12 Traditions workshop series. This workshop is being recorded and the audio will be available at a later date. We kindly ask you to please rename yourself using your first name only. And you can do a first name, initial, and if you want to say where you're zooming in from. A moment of silence for the Serenity Prayer. Higher power, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Sorry.
And I'd like to introduce our presenters and our tech hosts. So typically we have myself, Mary Jo L. from Illinois, and Cheryl F. from Toronto. Unfortunately, she's unable to be with us today, but she's hugely instrumental in helping us present this. And our tech host for today is Jen B. From Pennsylvania, and Mary Jo will be assisting as well. And then we also have a pilot group that helps us look at the questions and answers to see how well they fit for this presentation. And that is also with Jen B, Michelle H, and Leslie and Marchin. I'm going to forget their last initials, but we'd like to thank them as well. The agenda. The workshop mission and intent of the 12 traditions will be first. Then we will read the suggested commitment to service. We will go through the workshop guidelines. Then we will do an introduction of the tradition with a little reading from the Big Red Book. Then we will have the presentation of the skit, followed by discussion questions and questions and answers. Then we will talk about the takeaways from the presentation, and we will close with the tradition meditation. And we are scheduled for an hour to possibly an hour and a half if needed. Our mission: to provide education and experience through a series of 12 workshops on how the traditions work to keep meetings safe and recovery oriented by practicing spiritual principles. The intent of the 12 traditions from our Big Red Book, pages 489 and 490. The ACA traditions outline fellowship unity, group autonomy, and the ultimate authority of ACA, a loving higher power, as expressed in our group conscience. The ACA traditions frame our leadership style in the language of being a trusted servant. We avoid a style of governance or authority over another. Anonymity coming from love underlines all of the traditions and our group conduct. With the 12 traditions, we sustain ACA groups that allow the ACA solution of reparenting oneself to emerge and thrive.
The suggested commitment to service.
On page 601 in the Big Red Book. I perform service so that my program will be available for myself, and through those efforts, others may benefit. I will perform service and practice my recovery by 1, affirming that the true power of our program rests in the membership of the meetings and is expressed through our higher power and through group conscience. 2, confirming that our process is one of inclusion and not exclusion, showing special sensitivity to the viewpoint of the minority in the process of formulating the group conscience, so that any decision is reflective of the spirit of the group and not merely the vote of the majority. And 3, placing principles before personalities. And Jen?
4, 5, and 6. Sorry. Four, keeping myself fit for service by working my recovery as a member of the program. 5, striving to facilitate the sharing of experience, strength, and hope at all levels, meetings, intergroup, regional committees, service boards, and world services. 6, accepting the different forms and levels of service and allowing those around me to each function according to their own abilities. Pass.
7, remaining willing to forgive myself and others for not performing perfectly. 8, being willing to surrender the position in which I served in the interest of unity and to provide the opportunity for others to serve, to avoid problems of money, property, and prestige, and to avoid losing my own recovery through the use of service to act out my old behavior, especially in taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim, etc. And 9, remembering I am a trusted servant, I do not govern.
And now our workshop guidelines. We share in a general way. For our purposes today, we kindly ask everyone to focus on the topic being presented so that we may cover all of the material. Please remember to employ principles over personalities, curiosity over criticism, progress, not perfection, service coming from love, and HALT, our acronym for humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. And tradition 11 is our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TVs, and film. And the spiritual principle we will be discussing today, anonymity. The spiritual principles.
By the way, we have the wrong tradition on here. It's TV, films, and other public media. But we all know that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The spiritual principles behind the traditions are the spiritual principles that we lacked in our families of origin. Therefore, we developed survival skills and laundry list traits in order to survive. By practicing the steps, we're learning to relate to ourselves. And by practicing the spiritual principles of the traditions, we're learning how to relate to others in healthy ways. Anonymity. From our Big Red Book, page 545 and 546. In ACA, we have learned that the spiritual principle of anonymity means much more than merely identifying by our first name only at meetings. Anonymity means that we are willing to surrender our notions of personal ambition. Whether we would admit it or not, appearing in the media using our full name sets us apart from other ACA members. By doing so, we begin to feel different, and the feeling of isolation creeps in. We also get the feeling that we are required to perform or say the right thing, which is a version of our people-pleasing trait. We can set ourselves up for an ACA relapse by placing ourselves in the public eye. Attraction is different. Attraction is making information available about ACA without strings. There are no pitches and no grand promises. This means that ACA members let others know about the program without promoting ACA or breaking personal anonymity. Mary Jo?
We're going to do a skit, and this skit is about a famous boxer who uses the name Mr. ACA, who just won his fight and is now being interviewed. And a reminder of our 11th tradition, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, films, and other public media. Okay, and Ma will start the skit.
Oh, Mr. ACA, congratulations. How would you describe winning this fight?
I want to thank Adult Children of Alcoholics. As the leader of our meeting, I know I speak for everyone in the program when I say we have found courage because of the 12 steps. Without this program, I would not be where I am today. I have the confidence to fight. You can find us at adultchildren.org. And I specifically want to call out the good folks in my meeting, which we've named the Knockout Group. This is such a great meeting. I know they're all watching me. A special thank you to John Smith, Jane Anderson, Megan Hill, and Paul Jones, who have consistently been in my corner.
Thanks for talking with us, Mr. ACA. It sounds like everyone should attend your meeting. It has obviously done a world of good for you.
Sorry about that.
Can you believe this guy? He is announcing our names and our group on the air.
I know. This is not good. My family thinks I know him from my boxing club.
Wow, this is bad for me. I could lose clients over this. I'm not sure they will understand. This is so embarrassing. I'm not embarrassed. I think it's great. I have a Facebook page all about my recovery. It lets people know I have completely changed from an angry person to a loving one. Later that day.
We interrupt this program to bring you this late breaking news. Mr. ACA has been arrested for drunken disorderly conduct and assaulting a police officer. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. All right. We hope you enjoyed the skit. What we're going to do next is go through some discussion questions. Please consider the impact on newcomers and how traditional 11 spiritual principles are an important personal to personal recovery, as well as how we handle group business. Okay, so our guidelines during this sharing time are the discussion question time is that each person will have a minute to share. And if you, we'll ask you to raise your hand. Is there anybody in the group on the call who doesn't know how to raise their hand electronically? Okay, I think we're all good.
It's 1 minute or 2 minute?
Two.
I may be wrong, Aaron.
Two.
Okay, 2 minutes, thanks. Thank you, sorry about that. All right, so then we'll start with the first question. Explain the difference, actually it's two questions. Explain the difference between attraction and promotion, and why do we choose attraction as a public relations policy rather than promotion? So if you'd like to respond to this question, these questions, please raise your hand. Okay, Arjun.
Yes, hi everybody, I am from the Netherlands. Attraction rather than promotion. A lot is said with the last part when the person is arrested for drunk behavior and violence. That is the opposite of attraction, that chases people away. And when it is promoted, like it was before, just after the game, then the whole program comes into a very negative light.
Thank you. Anyone else? Actually, we looked up the definitions of attraction and promotion. And attraction is wanting to learn, know, or be involved more with someone or something. Promotion is a plan to consciously influence someone's involvement. So why do we choose attraction rather than promotion? Because some people in the program feel like, oh, we should be out there advertising all the time. Buddy?
Yeah. Well, with that particular skit, that was pretty good. And the problem with promoting in that manner is, what actually is he promoting? A boxing club? I would not think of contacting ACA after seeing this guy, because to me, I don't want to get in a boxing ring and get my lights punched out. So That's what I see. That was a very good skit. And for exactly that reason, which now he's drunk, and now it tells me, well, whatever that ACA is, oh yeah, well, that might work real good in the ring, but it's not working real good outside the ring. That's a pass.
Thank you, buddy. Anyone else? We're sort of at the mercy of whoever that person is who's trying to do the promotion. Are they promoting themselves or are they promoting the program? But they're attaching their reputation to us, which is not what this is about. So, yeah. Thank you. All right. Let's go to the next question. How does the spiritual principle of anonymity in 12-step programs differ from the dictionary definition of anonymity? And the dictionary says anonymity is the condition of being anonymous. Anonymous means not being identified by name or being a reference to an unknown name, for instance, something written by anonymous. So again, how does the spiritual principle of anonymity in 12-step programs differ from that dictionary definition? Or how? What is it? Yeah.
Mary Jo, can you repeat the dictionary definition?
Yes, it's the condition of being anonymous. Anonymous means not being identified by name or by your unknown name. Well, or a reference to an unknown. Anonymous means a reference to an unknown name, but it means not being identified by name when you're anonymous. Erin.
So how I would see the difference in the program's version of anonymity to just the typical, you know, our serenity prayer is not signed. It's signed anonymous, although some of us know who actually wrote that. But in the 12-step message of anonymity and the spiritual principle being that we're all equal to each other, nobody becomes more important, nobody has more power than anyone else. And that being so, that if I'm seen as more important or I'm putting somebody else on a pedestal as more important, then it changes the balance of recovery and makes me feel like I'm more important, feel like I might have to do more, feel like I have to be perfect. So it's going to divert me from, you know, being my authentic self.
Thank you, Erin. Anyone else? Jen?
Yes, hold on, set the timer. The thing that stuck out to me that maybe didn't stick out before about this tradition is that it's the definition of anonymity as it pertains to 12-step meetings includes not having personal ambition, which lends to what I've shared already, like I'm just one person in a group of other people as an equal. I'm not there to promote my business, hopefully my ego, things like that.
Thank you, Jen. The tradition 11 is about maintaining personal anonymity outside of our meetings. In relation to a public relations policy. But let's take a little bit into the meeting itself, which has been referred to a little bit in the two comments. So, you know, we are equals in our meetings. It doesn't matter what we do professionally or otherwise, it shouldn't matter. So if I'm a professional of any kind, how can using or talking about that status affect others in my group? So for instance, if I'm a therapist and I go to an ACA meeting regularly and I talk about being a therapist, how does that impact the group? Jen?
I'm thinking particularly of newcomers here. Like if I'm a newcomer and I go to a meeting and someone talks about their position as a lawyer, their position as a therapist, that might really skew me as to what ACA is about. Where if I go and everybody is leaves their profession or you know, things that are equally lateral to that at the door, then I would have more of a sense of community and belonging, and like, oh, this is, people are talking about their issues and I can relate to that. That's what I can think of.
Okay, Buddy?
I'm trying to think of how to frame this. If I hear someone in an ACA meeting who is letting known that they're a therapist, it leads me into judgment to think like, well, you must not be any good with doing the therapy work for yourself, or you wouldn't be in ACA. Like, how good of a therapist could you be? I don't know. It takes me down into a judgmental road. And it also undermines my faith in therapy, again, because, well, if therapists need to come to ACA, then whatever they're being taught in school must not be working for them. I have a negative opinion. I'm sorry. I can't really frame it properly.
Thanks, buddy. Erin?
So I think of that in terms also of if somebody is kind of touting their professionalism, you know, I or a newcomer or an ACA who already lacks self-worth may see themselves as, you know, lacking self-worth because, oh, that person's more important than me. That person knows more than me. Oh, that therapist is judging me. You know, so that's the other mindset. And then if I am someone who is, you know, been unemployed or just, you know, struggling professionally to make it, once again, you know, it's just going to kick in more of my shame. And there's a slogan that I really like that I think fits this. And that slogan, which brings me into the humility of anonymity, is, you can have a meeting without me, but I can't have a meeting without you. Pass.
Thanks, Erin. I think of this in terms of also that I wonder whether the person is trying to drum up business, so to speak. I mean, from my experience, or what I understand, like a therapist is supposed to try to do continuous improvement, and if they choose to do an ACA meeting as that, that's fine with me. But I don't want to know that they're a therapist while they're doing it, because then I've had experiences with fellow travelers where one in particular had said, "Oh, I think I'm going to go see her because she's really good. I love what she shares," and that feels like, in general, to place themselves in that position crosses a line. So it's a tough one for me. Arjun?
No. For me, it's also restraint in the light of the previous question, promotion rather than attraction, or attraction rather than promotion, sorry. Restraint when I am touring visitors for the street life in our town. I'm a tour guide. I do come across one of our town meeting centers, And there I do explain something about the 12-step programs in general and let people know how many variations of the program there are, not promoting one over the other. And during the walk, people can realize, oh yes, he's a psychiatric patient, he's coming from dysfunctional families, he's a drug addict, he's a gambling addict, he's a gaming addict, he's this and that and such and so. And people can think for themselves what the program could do for me in the situation. But I'm during that walk, I do not mention the programs anymore. I must restrain myself to not promote. And just, I named it there at that point at the meeting center and not during the rest of the walk.
Thank you. Thank you, Arjun.
Erin? I have another point, which is that for me, I have a profession which probably 3/4 of the population, or at least 2/3 of the population, are very interested in and want to talk about. And I had to be careful about even saying what that was, because it would divert me from my meeting and it could get me into, you know, feeling special, and all that other stuff, which is just going to completely take away from the anonymity. It's going to completely take away from the focus on myself, my shame, my abandonment, my laundry list traits. So it's kind of like regardless of what the profession is or what level of professionalism it has, if it's diverting me from my reasons for being in that meeting because there's too much attention being paid on it and I'm getting my unmet ego needs met, you know, through that instead of learning to reparent. Pass.
Thank you, Erin. One thing that diversion from this a little bit, but we try to make sure at the WSO level that we're not listing meetings that are being conducted by therapists. And so if anybody finds one, we hope that they let us know. But back in the 80s and 90s, we didn't have very strong guidelines about what an ACA meeting should actually be and how it should be conducted. And we had, I know, especially in the Chicago area, we had a lot of meetings that were conducted by therapists, sort of as group therapy kind of things. And they were listed on the WSO website. But as time went on, that really wasn't ACA. And those meetings fell away like a lot of things did back in the 90s. And that kind of thing, together with the fact that we actually didn't have a book yet and we didn't have strong enough focus, is why we ended up going from about 2,000 meetings down to 400 by the mid, by around 2005. And then the Big Red Book was published in 2006. And then now we've been growing ever since. So I just wanted to throw that in there as a little bit of history. Okay, thanks, Jen.
Yes, hi. So I have a question to that. I don't know where this falls in the format, but when you said that you don't have meetings run, I don't know exactly how you heard it, but do you mean therapists like saying I'm a therapist and I'm running this meeting, like promoting their therapy, or just not even run by a person who happens to be a therapist? Like if you knew I was a therapist and I'm running a meeting, like I'm starting a new meeting, but I'm not promoting my therapy. Like, I just wanted clarity on that, as on the WSO level, where they stand on that.
If I happen to be a therapist and there's a meeting and I chair the meeting, that's one thing. As long as there's rotation of service in that meeting and it's not just run by that one person and there's no opportunity for anyone else, especially this could happen if it's, you know, we have a lot of meetings that are held in facilities that are mental health facilities because they make the space available. But those meetings should be like regular ACA meetings where the membership of the meeting does rotation of service. If, however, the meeting is conducted by a therapist or a staff member consistently, then that isn't a true, that doesn't follow sort of like the true definition of what an ACA meeting should be. Does that explain it?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Okay, Arjun?
Yeah, on the subject of a professional in the meeting, first meeting in my town, there was a professional, and because of the way he acted, there was no recovery among the people, because he would work for us and he would take all the responsibility we learned to take, we should learn to take from any version of the program. He took that away from us, and he would solve all our problems, etc., that kind of talk. That's just not happening, because then we don't learn. And because we don't learn, we come into stumble into new problems, and then he has more work for us, and thus prolonging our situation of misery instead of recovery. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Thank you. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the next question. But by the way, as I see that, you know, we have the wrong tradition on top, because it doesn't say other public media. That tradition was changed in 2014. It was a proposal at the ABC in 2013 to make that change, and then it was adopted by polling the fellowship in 2014, and it changed. Okay. Question three, and I think we maybe have answered most of this, but how does the spiritual principle of anonymity relate to the principle of attraction rather than promotion? So like, in other words, what's happened or what might happen when someone breaks their anonymity with the media, like in the skit? We touched on it a little bit, but does anybody have anything more to say about that? Arjun?
Yeah, quite a strong, really sad example of experience with two people, two well-known people in my country who did follow their versions of the program, and they relapsed into suicide, and that really caused a wave of suicides all across the country from people who held them on a high pedestal. Well, if they give up, then there's no hope for any good life for them as well. So that was a very strong example.
Very. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And that actually brings up the question about putting people on pedestals in general, that anytime we find ourselves making someone else more important than we are, or someone actively trying to be more important, it has consequences potentially. Erin, you had your hand up.
Yeah. So for me, you know, how does this spiritual principle relate to attraction rather than promotion? Is I'm not attracted to somebody who's perfect. I'm attracted to somebody who's on a journey and, you know, I'm attracted to somebody who shows the humility, who shows that they're not there for their ego, for their ambitions. You know, I'm attracted to someone who feels more authentic, that I can speak to and relate to. You know, someone who's an equal, somebody who's another ACA, who has experience, strength, and hope that I want. So somebody that can kind of show me the ropes, because they've been there themselves. And so that's how that works for me.
Thanks, Erin. Martin?
Hi. Perhaps it was mentioned earlier, and I've heard it in Erin's share just a minute ago that for me, the difference between attraction and promotion is, you know, authenticity. You know, it's just, if I hear someone, I don't know, sharing authentically about the journey, and you know, they don't, you know, try to say I'm a doctor, I'm a banker, I'm this or that. I'm just drawn to their story, so to speak, to their like spiritual story, not to their kind of material life. And you know, I think that's the anonymity. You know, if I'm, I don't know, try to assert myself from a position, oh, I've been in recovery for X amount of years, and that led me to becoming, I don't know, a famous actor, book writer, whatsoever, then I'm just kind of promoting and not attracting. And I always struggled with adverts. I very often don't get them. So for me, it's just the authentic part, you know, it's just hearing the story, hearing someone struggle, being vulnerable in the moment without trying to, I don't know, make themselves known or whatsoever. That's kind of how I try to just share my problems, share my experience, as opposed to things that are part of my life, like my kind of, you know, material life, of that I pass things.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. A follow-up question to this, you know, what's the difference between, you know, some groups, if they're having an event, a recovery event, what would be the difference between posting a flyer for that recovery event in a, like a recovery center, or posting one in a grocery store? What would guide your group in making a decision where to post an event? And what type of event is good for one and not the other, potentially? Karen?
So on this question, what comes to mind to me is that depending on what kind of an event it is, so if it was like our inner group did an informative event with other 12-step programs, and you know, it was advertised to the community to come and, you know, get pamphlets about the different 12-step programs, what they were about, and that something that I would post in a grocery store, I would post that anywhere. But if I were, for example, posting an event for an anniversary meeting or a speaker meeting, you know, something more prominent that our group was putting on, whether it was a traditions presentation, you know, live and all that, if I posted that in a grocery store, I have no control over who's going to come. I have no control over who they're going to bring, whether they're going to bring children, and risking the anonymity of other people that are there. The person that sees this in a grocery store doesn't really have enough information in terms of what they're coming to and what it's all about. You know, it must just might say something and refreshments and, you know, come along and that's why they're there. But then it may be, you know, my employer or my neighbor or somebody that, you know, as an attendee there, I now feel more shamed and embarrassed because maybe it's new for me, or I just don't want people to know. So that would be the difference for me.
Thank you, Erin. So how do we let people know about the program? I mean, we talk about, you know, like when we sort of caution people when they get in the program, don't go out and try to get everybody to know to come into the meeting. We come to the meetings for ourselves, and hopefully it is attraction. As we get better, you know, they may be attracted to what's causing the change. Sharon.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Sharon, adult child in Puerto Rico. I think this would be answered by something we don't usually practice, or I haven't seen it practiced so much in ACA, which is open versus closed meeting. I saw it once. I was in a meeting and a student wanted to do a report for about this program, and they asked, can they be in the meeting? It was a Zoom meeting. And then we made a decision by group conscience if we were going to open it for that student. But before that, the group had not established which meetings were open or closed. So I think that would be something that we could, each group could consider, at least having maybe once in a while an open meeting, like each group could decide, like, this is going to be open. And so the shares are a bit different when it's open, and anyone can come, therapists of all levels, any professional area, and it would serve for this tradition. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. You bring up a really good point about open versus closed meetings. And we actually have a majority of our meetings on the WSO website are listed as open meetings. I think there's a misunderstanding about what open and closed means. And we might not do a good job at explaining the difference. Open meetings means that it's open to anybody, and it could be a therapist, it could be a student, somebody doing a paper on 12-step programs, whatever, it could be anybody. A closed meeting is one where it's intended for those who identify as ACAs only. And then like in the case you described, if someone wants to attend the meeting for another purpose, the group can do a group conscience to decide whether they will do that. In one of my meetings, when we were in person, we had somebody who showed up at the meeting, and now somebody who's doing something like that doesn't always have to tell us what they're doing, but fortunately, frequently they do. And we had somebody show up one time who didn't call in advance and just came and said, I'm a student, I wanna sit in on your meeting. And we had to ask her to leave, she could stay if she wanted to be here for an ACA meeting as an ACA, but that we weren't open to that. But I think we maybe need some more education about the difference between the two types of meetings. So thank you. Jen?
Yes. So actually this came up at a meeting I used to go to as well. And in my mind, there's a difference between a meeting that's open to everybody, including people who want to do research, versus a meeting that's open, say, for like family or friends who want to be supportive of the ACA or in their life. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to add to that, but to me, there's a difference. Like the framing of open.
You might be pointing out the fact that maybe we need a third category. So thank you.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just add to, like, some people went to, I know some people who weren't alcoholics, but went to open AA meetings because the addiction they suffered from wasn't in their area. The meetings weren't available for that, so they went to open AA meetings. They were still there for recovery. So also, I guess, similarly, maybe someone doesn't identify as an ACA, but there's no Al-Anon or something, no CODA meeting, so they go to an open ACA meeting. Sorry.
Thank you. Uh-huh. And I think also, as time goes on, as we become more identified in people's minds as adult children of alcoholic and dysfunctional families, almost anybody would qualify for our meetings because they're, most of the world, I think, comes from a dysfunctional family of one sort. Thank you. Martin?
Thank you. In Polish fellowship is quite commonly practiced for the meetings to have like first meeting of the month open, and or whichever they decide. And I was just thinking that perhaps it's our IT committee something to think of, how to actually maybe encourage meetings to, yeah, if they want to be closed, that's fine. But if they would be actually willing to be open once a month for open meeting or on a certain day, to add that kind of option. So that would be a way to, you know, letting others know about our meetings, things.
Thank you, Martin. Okay. All right, let's go to the next question. So based on everything we've talked about, how would you explain anonymity to a newcomer or a sponsee? Or any other ideas? So I'm a newcomer to the meeting, and I say, well, why do we have to be anonymous? What is this all about? Why can't I be more open about who I am and what I do? And what's the difference if I tell you what my last name is?
Or what my profession is, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Martin?
Thank you. I think, you know, trying to explain that anonymity, you know, it's tricky, but, you know, for example, I don't know, I might walk down the road with someone in the program or not in the program, and you know, I see someone that I know from meetings, and I could just say, oh, this people, you know, I know him or her from a meeting, and you know, that person might actually not want to know, be identified as a member of ACA because, yeah, for example, they might be afraid of family. Actually, you know, recently I did have a talk with someone who said, you know, they didn't want to be, you know, identified even by a name because they are worried that their family might find out, and they don't want to, you know, go through all this kerfuffle of explaining to family what ACA is and why they are there, blah, blah, blah. I know for myself that I don't really expand on these topics with my family of origin. So there might be, you know, I think back in the day, especially in AA, you know, where, you know, being an alcoholic could really just exclude you from a, you know, your whole kind of, you know, community, you know, it was important to protect that anonymity. And I don't know if I'm actually doing a good job of explaining that principle of anonymity to a newcomer, but I think it's just important that, you know, I don't want to be identified by, you know, I just want to be identified as an adult child with first name Martin, and nobody needs to know where I live, what I do, and whatnot. So either I don't have issues with work or family, or I will finish because I'm just rambling things.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. Arjun?
No, it's almost like two different questions. It's, there's different answer to for the newcomer or for the sponsor. A newcomer, I think it's most important to let them know that what happens in the meeting stays in the meeting. And that's all that a newcomer needs to be assured of, that that type of anonymity is guaranteed. For the sponsee, is someone from whom we already know, okay, this person is going on with the program, is surrendering to the program. And then for the sponsee, we can talk like we talk here in this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Arjun. Okay. Okay, let's move to question five. How do our laundry list traits and other laundry list traits get in the way of anonymity in our meetings? I think we've touched on this a bit, but anything else to say or anything to say about this? Okay, if I am not maintaining anonymity. Okay, I'll stop there. Sharon? Sharon, okay.
Oh, thank you. I think this question, I think it relates to the previous one. I can say I'm an adult child. I can say that to my friend. I can say that to my mother. I can say that to my therapist, but I can't say my friend who I met at a meeting is an adult child. Mm-hmm. And if I do, if I'm talking about other people's whatever it is, personal issues, I am not on the good side of the laundry list. So I think it's a way to practice anonymity. It's not so much about my personal anonymity. It's about how I practice protecting others in a healthy way. I learned as an adult child to keep family secrets, and that was a very negative experience. And so I need to learn I can talk about who I am and what I went through. But whatever is good or bad in other people's lives, that's their business, and I need to focus on myself. That's what I think about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Martin?
Thank you. I felt Erin was in front of me. For me, when I think about the laundry list and anonymity, for example, you know, if I don't know, want to assert myself talking from a place, I don't know, of the first or the laundry list, you know, becoming an authority figure, I could always, you know, say, well, I'm a well-established, I don't know, psychologist, doctor or whatnot. And this way I could assert myself, you know, try to assert myself in a meeting. And that's why I would want to break that anonymity. The same other way, you know, it's, I know for me personally, I could get very, I've lost the word, but I'm just going to go with kind of overwhelmed or defensive. But if someone says, you know, they are a doctor, whatever, and I could just straight away just go into this fear of authority figure, and all of a sudden I might just want to stop sharing at this meeting, because I might just feel, oh, someone might, you know, he might be judging me. So then, you know, the trait 7, I believe we judge ourselves harshly. And the same way we can go in the other laundry list trait, you know, if someone, I don't know, for example, says that they're not doing well in life or they're going through divorce or something like this, I could just go into like judging them harshly because my other laundry list trait 7 just kicks in, and then I'm just like, not really focusing anymore on kind of being in the meeting, but I'm just, you know, in a way in my head I can act out, you know, just like, oh, what a loser, blah, 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 blah. So I think, yeah, I will stop here, and definitely interested in hearing all those things.
Thank you, Martin. Arjun?
Yeah, bit opposite to the actual question. I think the laundry list traits are a blessing for ACA comparison to other versions of the program. Because of the laundry list, the timid people may much sooner realize, hey, I want to share, I need to share, and I can share, I'm allowed to share my recovery, my misery. And as such, people on the other list, other laundry list, the outspoken, the extrovert people, will much sooner learn, hey, I can tone down myself. So in that regard, I think the laundry list and the other laundry list traits are a blessing in this. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, the realization of what they are and what we can do about them. Thank you. I'm going to call on Buddy and then Erin. Buddy, go ahead.
Yeah, I have no idea how to answer this question regarding the laundry list traits, but I do know for me, there's another issue with the whole tradition of anonymity thing. And it says in it, at the level of press, radio, TV, films, and other public media. So maybe other public media covers a Zoom meeting. So I don't have my last name up there. But I see a difference between anonymity and I guess confidentiality. And in the area of last names or what I do or what I did for a living, like I have no problem with someone knowing my last name, Schmidt, and my profession. I'm retired, but I was a firefighter for the city of Philadelphia. So I think we really get it confused as to what anonymity actually means when we start becoming so anonymous to each other. I realize if I lose my phone, I have no ability to get in contact with anyone because I can't look their phone number up in the public phone book because I don't know anybody's last name. So I'm really going to be stuck. I know at the level of service in my other fellowship, we're encouraged to use our last name because so many of us have the same first name and in many cases, the same last initial. Again, you know, who we're referring to.
That's the time.
But thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Aaron?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great point. Like, that's how I am with, it's like, I'm anonymous outside of the program, but inside of the program, I want to be known. And, you know, hopefully I get to know who you are. But the question also, you know, how does my traits get in the way of my anonymity? When I look at those traits, if I'm overdoing it because of an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, if I'm people pleasing or approval seeking, is it that my unmet ego needs are getting in the way of my ability to just be an equal and anonymous in terms of being an equal, just being another adult child needing to be with another adult child? Pass.
Thanks, Erin. Jen?
Yes. So for me, there's a difference between personal anonymity in the meeting and then sharing who I am with the people I become friends with, because friendships have developed for me in this fellowship, and those people do know my last name and what I do or don't do for what my employment status is. But that doesn't come into the meeting. That comes into the friendship. So there's a difference with that. But I guess as far as the laundry list traits go, what I have to watch out for is both putting people on a pedestal and putting myself on a pedestal. I can feel like there's a meeting I went to where someone was doing everything and asked for help, and I tried to help, but then it was just me and them doing everything, and that didn't feel good either. Like, it still wasn't enough shared. So I decided to leave that meeting. Like, I tried to be a part of business meetings and we both made suggestions, but somehow that dynamic was still happening. But also I can put people on pedestals as well. So there's something for me to be mindful in a 10-step kind of way. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, John. Okay. My laundry list traits can get in the way. Do I want to be liked? Do I want to be important? Am I not recognizing the fact that I'm accepted just by being in the room? And that's important that we know that, or we help other people know that I'm accepted because I showed up, and I don't have to be anything else that I'm really not, or that I really don't want to be, or that I've been maybe traditionally, but not anymore, hopefully. The dysfunctional parts anyway. Okay, next question. How does the spiritual principle of anonymity relate to relationships in personal recovery? Any thoughts on that? This is sort of an extension of a lot of the other things. Erin?
Thanks. You know, this is my absolute favorite question. I'm going to do this in all of the traditions because it speaks to the fact that we practice these principles in all of our affairs. And when I think about unity, equality, humility, and how important those three things are to anonymity, that if I'm practicing those in my relationships, and had only they been practiced in my family of origin, you know, my relationships would certainly be much more smooth and peaceful. And I am attracted to people that practice those principles. So pass.
Thank you, Erin. Jen, and then Sharon.
Hi. Kind of in a different way, where there's a difference for me in regards to, you know, how I share who I am in a meeting versus in my personal relationships. But on the flip side, like the parallel is just like in meetings, I don't want to put people on pedestals. I don't want to put myself on a pedestal. I don't want to do that in my personal relationships either. I want to be equal to my friends. I was just thinking, like, the saying, don't walk behind me, don't walk in front of me, just walk beside me and be my friend. Like, I want that in my personal relationships, and that would carry into, I want that in my meetings as well.
Thank you, John. Sharon?
Thank you. The questions asked about relationships, and I'm thinking about the relationship of with a professional. For example, my therapist doesn't know much about ACA, and she was asking me about helping her do a presentation for a group of professionals, and she could set it up, and that is part of the service and the fellowship, cooperating with professionals. The thing is, she knows me. I'm her patient client, so I can't do the presentation. I have to refer it to another member of the community, and they can give the presentation. And I am so grateful that she's interested, and I would love to do it, and I would love to show her how much I know about this program, but that wouldn't be practicing this principle of anonymity. That's how I understand it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you. One thing that we had, this makes me think of something that was said earlier and something that we've talked about. When in AA, people, when they meet other members of AA on the street and they say hi, and somebody says, "Oh, how do you know them?" They usually say, "Well, we're friends of Bill W." Okay. When we meet other ACAs on in public, you know, if we say, "I'm a friend of Tony A," not everybody knows what that means on you necessarily. Everybody in the program, but that I usually say, "Oh, I met them through a friend," because that. It's unlikely they're going to say, "Oh, what friend?" Well, if they do, then boundaries, people. You don't have to know everything, but anyway, maintaining anonymity of where we know people from. But in personal relationships and personal recovery, personal relationships for me within recovery are different than the relationships within the meeting. When I get to know somebody on a personal level, and I think it's been talked about, that I am not quite as anonymous. For instance, the people that I know well, I actually want to know an emergency contact for them, because if somewhere along the way I can't get a hold of them, and something might have happened to them, I want to know that. And so that's a choice that we make together. But within the meeting, we certainly would never share any of that kind of information. So any other thoughts or questions? Okay.
I have another one, not really related to this question, but just, I think we probably missed it earlier when we talked about, you know, how do we advertise or how do we promote? And I don't think we talked about our hospital institutions committees. Mm-hmm. And of course that's service work, which is also desperately needed. So there's a plug for if you want to promote our program, ways that it can be done. So.
Thank you, Erin. Yeah. Okay. Any additional thoughts or takeaways? Oh, Buddy, go ahead.
Yeah, again, it doesn't necessarily tie into Tradition 11 too much, but yeah, not only the hospitals and institutions, but on a personal level, when I go to my doctor's office, I can leave a pamphlet along with all the other pamphlets on the table. There's an AA pamphlet there. What is AA? What is Al-Anon? And I can leave pamphlets. What is ACA as well? And in my case, I kept my family doctor fully briefed on my own membership in the fellowship. And I told him if he has others who talk to him on a personal level about these kind of issues, you can certainly give them my phone number if they want to talk further about it. So there are lots of ways we can attract using our literature and by letting others know in a confidential way about our fellowship.
Yes. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, any other thoughts? All right. Well, thank you for being here today. We have resources available. We have a Traditions email account that if you have any questions or comments or whatever, contact us at traditions@acawso.org. Our workshop recordings and slides are located on the from the main page of adultchildren.org, and this is the link. And it's under the resources tab, I believe. Is that right, Martin?
Yes, it should be there. I will try to. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the link, but it would be under the resources or the audio recordings, I believe that's what it's called.
Thank you. We did not post Tradition 10 yet. We wanted to add some additional information to it, and we've all been busy and haven't been able to create that yet, but we didn't get to all the questions in Tradition 10 last month, and so we wanted to add something about that, but that will be posted when we get that done. Tradition 11 will probably be up there soon on that recordings website or page, and then workshop dates and Zoom information are found on the events calendar. For December, we will be meeting. We try to do it on the fourth Saturday of the month, but fourth Saturday sort of conflicts with the Christmas weekend. So we're going to do it on the 17th of December, Tradition 12 on the 17th of December. Okay, Buddy, did you have a question or a comment?
Just to mention that the 10th tradition, if I understand correctly, there is a committee coming together to try to look more further into the 10th tradition based on the attendance and all the different items that came up last month at our tradition workshop. I'm guessing more information can be found at the WSO website. Yeah. I remember, I remember Charlie and I think Alaska, what's her name, were discussing that, forming a committee.
Thank you.
Yes, it's more like a kind of peer review group that is being, we're trying to form. It's not only to look at tradition 10, but also at different violations of different other traditions in meetings and even events when it comes to posting events. So if you're interested, then I don't know when that group is going to get formed, but yeah, we're going to be looking at more than just the tradition 10 issues. Thanks.
And you can contact us at traditions@acawso.org if you're interested in that, and we can keep you abreast of, you know, who to contact and where to go with that.
Thank you. All right. And then seventh tradition contribution. Every ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And your contribution is a critical part of maintaining WSO services and delivering the message to the adult child who still suffers. The seventh tradition link is on the adultchildren.org website. So please check that out. And then the closing tradition 11 meditation. Can I have a volunteer to read this?
I can read it.
Thank you, buddy.
Tradition 11 meditation. Higher power, I ask you to guide me in maintaining my anonymity at the level of all media, because no one speaks for ACA or gives the appearance of speaking for ACA. We attract others to ACA by our good works and the good word of others. Help me discern when I might break my anonymity for a suffering adult child looking for a way out of confusion. This person might be a coworker or a family member. Help me know when to share some of my story or when to remain quiet and maintain my anonymity. May I avoid speaking out of turn or using my ego to share with people who may not be interested in ACA. At the same time, give me the courage to share this program when the moment is right.
Thank you. I think that sums it up beautifully. Thank you. And again, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your participation and just being here. And with that, take care, and we'll see you on the 17th. I'm going to stop the recording.
Thanks, Mary Jo.